This is a Jerry Pippin special report. What in the world is going on at Fort Benning? Reports of ETs appearing out of the blue, out of nowhere, in the vast landscape of one of the U.S. Army's most famous and largest Army bases, Fort Benning, Georgia, the home of U.S. Army infantry training and perhaps a lot of other things going on as well. Over the years, we have received reports from residents at nearby Columbus, Georgia, as well as those people on the Army post itself, reports of lights in the sky, mysterious UFOs, and Army combat helicopters in a pitched battle with UFOs. Abductions and strange stories abound. We have with us Roxy Lopez of TruthDenied.com. Roxy is best known for her work, and some good work, I might add, on chemtrails. Many videos are available of her work and her discoveries about chemtrails. But recently she was turned on to the story about what's happening at Fort Benning, largely because of John Vasquez. He has been telling a story for years now about an incident that happened to him while he was stationed at the Army base. Later in this show, we will be joined by two wives of combat veterans who are stationed at Fort Benning, and they will tell us what they are seeing, what they see happening in the skies over Fort Benning. Strange lights, eerie incidents in the night. Stay tuned for a very interesting show, to say the least. But first of all, let's bring on John Vasquez. John, it's good to have you on the show again.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I appreciate
it. John, we're going to ask you to tell your story again here in a little bit. But first of all, it's been a long time. This has been pretty all-consuming for you, this Fort Benning thing.
Yes, it has been, and I'm still working at it. And we're getting some surprises that's coming up right now, and hopefully everybody will be listening to all to me and Roxy and Nancy.
John, you mentioned Roxy Lopez. Let's go ahead and bring her on. But before I do that, we all know her for her video work and some radio work and broadcast work. But how did you get involved with Roxy?
I was introduced to Roxy by internet or Facebook, and I started typing to her and letting her know what my story was, and that's where it all started.
Okay, John, let's bring Roxy into the conversation. Welcome to the show, Roxy Lopez.
Thanks for having us on the show today, Jerry.
You know, a lot of our listeners are familiar with you, but not everyone. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about Roxy Lopez and how you got involved in all this?
Sure, no problem. For the past 30 years, I've been on the fringe of research and so forth. It started with UFOs, and of course it expanded. And now my current focus is chemtrails, weather modification, GMO, and Morgellons disease. That's my main focus. But of course, I'm always interested in UFO phenomenon. And I have definitely been introduced to that in the 80s. Sean David Morton was the first person that actually gave me some directions to Area 51 in 1990, which really wasn't an accessible place at the time. It still isn't. But that was where my first encounter was, and from that point on, I realized that the phenomenon of UFOs or unidentified flying objects, possibly even, our own military or extraterrestrial, was a reality. So
we know Sean David Morton. We met him personally once in Laughlin.
He's a good friend of mine.
And we have a video link to your chemtrails stuff from YouTube on this page. So I want to get right to Area 51. You got to tell me about this this thing that happened to you at Area 51.
Sure. Well, first of all, let me put it out there. I started a team called the Truth Denied, And so hence everything that we do is called The Truth Denied. The YouTube videos are accessible on YouTube under The Truth Denied or Chemtrails Kill. And then as far as Area 51 goes, what do you want to know, Jeff?
Well, Roxy, you went up there.
I did.
I mean, did you go just the one time?
One time.
Okay.
And I had two other people with me. And the irony of this situation was when we arrived at the we were on a main highway 17 miles west of the base. And, of course, you can't see the base or anything. And there's a mountain range there. And behind that mountain range is something called Groom Lake, or also referred to as Nellis Air Force Base. And when we got out there, we reminded ourselves that, oh, no, it's President's Day. The base is going to be shut down. Well, we were wrong. It was a perfect day to be there. And we weren't there 5 minutes, no kidding, when from behind that mountain came two ships that started to play with each other. And when I say play with each other, they came straight up off the ground. They had lights underneath them. Now, keep in mind, we're viewing something that's 17 miles away.
Was this in the daytime?
This was at 9 o'clock at night.
Okay.
We watched these two objects, play, interact with one another on a vertical. And then they kind of moved out and parked themselves, and that was astounding that they could move this quickly and then suddenly park themselves like a star. So we kept an eye on those. And they later on, by the way, in the night, did move again, moved away and quickly crossed the sky, crossed the entire sky in split seconds.
Okay, we need to know the location, if you can remember where you were. Were you by Groom Lake, or were you on that main highway?
It goes from Vegas to Tahoe, I believe.
Yes.
So, okay, and so that's the highway we were on. Now, there were some other really interesting things that we noted that night. For instance, there was lightning in the sky on the west side, the opposite side of the street that Nellis is at, or Area 51, whatever you want to call it. So the east is Nellis. The west is goes off into, terrain, desert terrain. We saw on the right-hand side, which was the west side, green lightning. Never seen green lightning before. Green. Day glow green, by the way. That was
green lightning. Wow.
It didn't look like...
You got to tell me more about this lightning. I want to know what it looked like. I mean,
and it would light up... to me, it wasn't... There wasn't a normality to it at all.
Was it just off in the horizon, like lighting up the whole horizon? Or was it flashes of lightning, shooting out there, jetting out there, like you get in Oklahoma, where I live?
It was, other than that, yeah. I mean, that's the first thing you notice is that, wow, it's not the right color. Here's another really weird thing. As we're traveling on this road, we were headed to the Little Alien, the famous Little Alien.
That's the little restaurant bar there in Rachel.
We heard of abductions in the town of Rachel. So from Area 51, from where we were when we first, we were 9 miles in, okay, 9 miles in on that highway, headed towards Little Alien. And the entire trip we noticed, from the east side of the road, running to the west side of the road, crossing the road, were these humongous, not rabbits, but hares. It stood, I am not kidding you, and we were not on drugs, all right? About 3 feet tall, these huge rabbits. And they would cross in droves from the east side to the west side. And I actually got a little paranoid. I didn't want to hit them, so we started going slower and slower and slower. Another very interesting thing is we parked on the side of the road, kept watching these ships, whatever they were. We could hear a very high pitch in the air that vacillated, wobbled, and we sort of tested each other out by saying, "Do you hear something?" And then we would hum what we heard. So we
can you hum what you heard for us, the audience here? I'd like to hear it.
A couple octaves up, but it was vibrating in two notes, like a really high pitch, though. Really high pitch. So you can almost not hear it. Mm-hmm. But if you really focused on it, you could hear it. So it was two notes, one that was higher than the other, and we could each hum it. We each started to hum what it was. And another interesting thing that we noticed was when we parked and we sat around, now we're out there like 2-3 hours, and we're sitting in the truck, and now we see vehicles coming out from Area 51. Now, keep in mind, we're on this road parked for 3 hours.
So it's after midnight now.
Yes, it was. And not one vehicle on the road. Not one. On a main highway to Tahoe, not one vehicle. So we were alone out there. And it got a little creepy. Because when we saw these Jeeps coming out, and Sean had already told us that, you know, there was a, you know, whacking hut or something out there, and you know, if they start approaching you, just stay on that main highway. Don't go on the dirt. Don't go any. Just stay on there because that's, you know, public access. And so we did. We parked right on the side of the road, and these Jeeps, there were about 10 of them at the end of the hour. You know what they did? They came all the way up to us with their lights on, and then they turned their lights off about 20 feet away from us, and they all parked all around us.
So were these regular Jeeps or like SUVs?
You know, they were Jeeps. That's what we could see in the dark, you know what I mean? I think.
Would they have one or two people in each car?
We couldn't see any people in them.
Okay.
That's a strange thing. And, you know, unlike stories that I have read, I've read a few stories about people tell me that they see white Jeeps. Well, these were black. So I don't know. These were black. And, no, we never saw a human being. So
no one talked to you. I mean, no one stopped you or anything.
John said they won't talk to you. They probably won't talk to you. You know, we probably showed up on an infrared or something like this. We were sort of prepared, you know, for what would happen. And, you know, we didn't have cameras on us, Jerry, so there was nothing for them to confiscate but our conversation, you know. And so but it does get a little creepy over time out in the middle of nowhere, no moon, and, you know, pitch black, just pitch black. It was cold because it was February, like I said, President's Day. And you do get a vibe, but we're pretty balanced people, so we didn't get, like, all creeped out to the point where, you know, let's get the hell out of here or anything like that. So we just hung out the duration until we got really tired. That changed my life. Some of what we saw changed my life forever, because now I was witness for the first time in my life. I was now witness, and so were the two other people with us, witness now to craft that we couldn't explain. And, you know, we're not aerospace tech, you know, we don't have degrees in this, but the logical mind says these things are traveling so fast, and they disappear out into the atmosphere, then they show back up. At one point we saw three other craft that came up from the north and came into Area 51.
Well, actually, other than the hum of the high pitch, you know, the thing you simulated for us, did these craft make any noise at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I will say, again, we're viewing this from 17 miles away. That mountain range that is all around Area 51, you can look at it on a map. It is a huge mountain range. And these objects could light that mountain range up. So now that in the pitch dark.
Now, when you say light up the mountain range, was it like flares?
No, not at all. Not at all.
No. I'm not asking if you thought it was flares. I'm asking if it's that kind of light. You know, the whole mountain was lit up.
Because you could see like pitch black, and then you could see an object rise up from behind the mountain and then go straight up in the air, and then another one come up, and then them, you know, the crews, you know, at a high altitude too, you know, they were, you could see when they first came up over that mountain range, that's where you could, you know, the mountain range became illuminated. Now the further they got up, the less illuminated that mountain range was. And they didn't have tracers on them or anything like that, like a flare. At the time, I didn't even really know about flares. I can tell you this much. They flew around, and flares don't fly around.
Well, no, I understand they're not flares. I'm just trying to figure out if it was reflected light or like a spotlights on a hill. I mean, that's pretty common out in Nevada.
Absolutely, because it was underneath these crafts that had the light. The light.
What kind of lights were there?
Okay, we're 17 miles away, so you know I can't identify. You know, I can't see any exact. It's just like a fire underneath the craft. Okay, a light coming from underneath these craft, and these craft had to be huge, huge. For us to even be able to see them.
So it was some other sort of power source, I guess. I mean, it wasn't a jet or rocket ignition or anything like that.
No, it wasn't shooting off of it.
Okay.
It was stationary to the vehicle. No.
Mm-mm. Okay.
Well, it's 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning by then.
I would imagine, yeah.
Did you go into the ANN?
No, we never did. We cruised by it. It was all, you know, closed, shut down, whatever. And we never did make it to the town of Rachel. What we did was we cruised back. See, our plans were to go to Las Vegas to spend the night, go to Area 51, you know, hang out, see if we could see anything, go back to Las Vegas, spend the night, and then go back to California. Well, after that experience, literally this is what we did. We were silent all the way back to Vegas. We had nothing to say to each other.
These other people that were with you, are they still involved in UFO research?
They are. They are.
Okay.
They are. Very credible. Very credible people. As a matter of fact, one of them is now in radio, and the other one is a big rock star.
Well, good.
Roxy, thanks for the Area 51 story. Now let's get to Fort Benning. What about this story that got you interested? I mean, what turned you on about Fort Benning?
Okay, Fort Benning. Now, John is what got me interested to begin with. Because, in all honesty, I didn't have any research on Fort Benning. I never even heard of the story. I've heard of military bases and this kind of stuff, but I never heard of it. So, John's right. You know, I think we were introduced by somebody on Facebook, and we started talking. And months went by, and we would just talk back and forth a little bit, and I knew that I never knew John's story, by the way, until a couple months ago. And John gave me a call. I said, "Here's my number. Give me a call." And I'm not kidding you. He calls me up. He gets right into this story, and I don't think I said anything for an hour and a half. I just listened, and
okay.
I was like, "Whoa!" And you know, the earnest, the way that he explained the story. I'll tell you this. I have a good judge for truth, and my intuition is very strong. I never for once thought to myself that this person was making this up. I never thought for once that it was so amazing, his story, that I stopped and said, "John, what are you doing?" And John needed help. He was trying to uncover these troops, you know, try to get back to where these guys might be, just talk to them, this and that, blah, blah, blah. And I felt an earnest passion for the story after he told it to me, and a passion for John, and John's passion in this. I think he's a warrior because he's stuck with this for years and years and years and will not give up. And I thought, God, John, you know, what can I do, though? You know, I'm not a ufologist. I don't study this in depth. What can I do? And he said, "I don't know." And I said, "Okay, let me think on this. Let me think." And I went and I tried to get information on Fort Benning, and it was just the usual stuff. You know, a couple references here and there, a couple YouTube videos, John's book, etc. And I just thought, God, I can't get my hands on anything new or anybody that wants to discuss it for that matter. And it's very easy for me to get information from people. I mean, I post a question on Facebook, I'll get 200 answers. No one was touching this subject. No one would give me any information. No one seemed to have any information. So that became, I guess, for me, well, I want to go down this rabbit hole.
Okay, Roxy, let's bring in John Vasquez again. And, John?
Yes.
Why don't we kind of recap your story for those people who haven't heard it? We did a show, and it's still available. And we've also done one with Ted Steenbergen, who had some things happen to him at Fort Benning, and basically we have a couple other people talking to us about things at Fort Benning, and I think it would be good for the audience if you just kind of go over your story, your experience. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Roxy for the introduction and also the story that I'm going to be coming up with right now, and I appreciate it. I got to go back to 1977. That's when this event took place, or incident. And this is when I was in training, United States Army at Fort Benning, Georgia. And get to the right to the bottom of this. This is when I started. Training course and. I believe that when we were getting ready for this mandatory formation, that's what it was called. This was about 7:30 at night, and one of our drill sergeants came into our building and told us, "Listen, you guys are all going to go out there to this mandatory formation. It's basically like a parade formation, and there's about 1,300 men from this parade formation." We were talking about Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie Company, and Delta Company, which I was in. And we came out there about 7:30, and we're still introducing ourselves, getting acquainted with everybody. And we just stood there for about from 7:30 to 8:10 when one of this guy who was standing in front of me, he's a tall guy, very tall, and he said something like, "What is that?" And I didn't pay no attention at first. I didn't know what he was talking about. So I started talking to my buddy who was sitting to my right, and he said it again. You know, he said, "What is that?" And my curiosity got the best of me, so I kind of looked, and, you know, I'm saying to myself and saying to everybody, "What is it? What's so important about, this, what is it talk that he was saying?" And he pointed to the right sky. And he said, look at the sky on the right side. And I said, "Okay, sure." And all I saw was the stars at first. I told him, "All I see is star." He says, wait, watch one of those stars." So I did. All of a sudden, the star moved. When it was just stationary, and all of a sudden it moved. Now you got to imagine in your hand right now a ice cube, and on the floor is a stainless steel floor. You put that ice cube on the floor and you push it across this floor, and it gradually moves across, and that's how this star moved. It's a smooth sort of type of movement. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, "Well, this ain't a plane." Or a helicopter. And one of the drill sergeants asked me, Sergeant Newkirk, asked me, "What do you think it was, Vasquez?" I said, "Well, and back in 1977, you heard a lot about satellites." So I said, "Yeah, it looks like a satellite to me." And by now, when everybody's kind of looking at this object, and it stopped and went away from us, came back, and started moving across the sky again, and it stopped, went away, came back, and started moving again, and the whole battalion is pointing to the sky, and everybody's talking out loud and trying to figure out what this thing is, and I had a strange feeling that this thing was watching us or something. It was really a bizarre feeling, you know? It's like this thing was staring at us or looking down at us. That's the feeling I had. And, by now, the captain of the company that I was with started walking out from his building, and that's when one of the drill sergeants again told us to stand at attention, and he walked up to this podium and was going to start making a speech about our training course for the next 6 to 8 weeks. And, I don't know, but all of a sudden I hear this unusual sound. It sounded like a rushing noise. So I kind of leaned backwards just a bit because I couldn't move that much. But when I looked to my left, I saw Charlie Company men breaking out of formation and running. And I was thinking, what's going on here? And the rest were still standing still. And when I did that, I see...
Now, John, when you say running, you mean they were running in different directions?
Different directions, like they were taking cover.
Okay.
And I see this, when I saw this, I'm thinking, what's going on here? Maybe something's happening here. And I see this bright, intense light, circular. It had a kind of bluish outline to it. And I thought it was, oh, it's a chopper. What's a chopper doing here in this formation? Must be something going on here. And I want to take a better look at this thing, and I leaned forward, and I was going to say something to the guy who was saying about this.
Now your group, you're still in formation, right?
We're still in formation.
Okay.
I was going to say something to this guy, and when I looked up, he's asleep.
What do you mean asleep?
He's asleep.
Standing up asleep?
Yes, sir, standing asleep. And I looked up and I said, uh-huh.
Now, John, what time of the evening was this?
This is from 8:10, about 8:15, 8:20.
A little early for him to fall asleep.
Yeah, it sure is. And we're in formation. This is a mandatory parade formation.
Right.
And you don't go to sleep on the formation. You don't. So, yeah, I thought, well, this guy's asleep. What's going on, you know? And then I leaned back to where I was standing, and I don't know what happened, but I guess I became unconscious for a few minutes, and, well, I guess I came out of it, and I couldn't move. I just cannot move. Both my legs were frozen.
But you're still in formation, right?
I'm in formation still.
Do you have any idea about a time element here, how long you were frozen or out or whatever?
Well, you know, I'm guessing right now is, less than 3 minutes?
Okay.
You know, something short, because I became very aware of what's happening. Everybody's running, and you know, I turn to my right, and I see my buddy running away from me, and I'm yelling at him to come back and help me because I couldn't move. So he came back and grabbed me, and then we both started running, and we were screaming at each other, you know, asking where the captain is, and we both knew where he was, so we ran over there, and there he was. There's the captain behind the podium. So I yelled out for him to wake up. And I'm sure I could have woke up everybody, but he didn't wake up. He was behind this podium, asleep, dead sleep.
Was everybody asleep, or just the group right around you?
No, some of us were around me that was standing asleep, and the rest were running to the tree lines, taking cover, and the others were diving underneath this cross.
How about the NCOs, the sergeants? Were they asleep?
I think some of the sergeants took cover too because, you know, things were happening so fast and some of the people were moving and running in panic. I mean, well, we were afraid of this light that was coming down on us. I just couldn't fathom why this light was so strange looking.
Now, this happened in September of 1977.
September 2nd, 1977.
Right around Labor Day.
Well, yeah, close to that, yeah.
Yeah.
And by now, like I said, by now when I see these guys running and taking cover and the captain's asleep, my buddy's turned around and I don't know what he was looking at, but his face looked pale, like he'd just seen a ghost or something. So I grabbed his neck and collar and his shoulder. I shook him. I shook him real hard and I said, don't look at it, don't look at it. And he sort of came to and he's asking me, what's going on? I said, just take cover, run, take cover, you know? And we started running, and we went to this building where underneath the building there's like on the other side, I think it was the far end of this one building, we heard our names called out, and we ran over there, and we see about four guys underneath this building, and we crawled underneath there, and that's when the argument started. We started arguing about each other, and you know, using profanity, and things were happening fast. And
arguing? You mean you guys were not sure about what you were seeing? You were arguing about what you were seeing? Is that what you mean?
Well, we thought, well, we'll get to that real quick. It's just that when we're arguing with each other and telling each other we're all wrong or whatever it was, I know we're used for profanity, but all of a sudden we saw Sergeant Santini just come out of the building where my buddy and I ran out of there. He's flapping his arm up and down and screaming, take cover, and he started to run. And we lost him at this building over here, and all of a sudden, from the second floor, there was a bright light about the size of a watermelon, and it swooped down to his height and chased after him. It was a bizarre look. That was so bizarre. And he chased after him. We heard a thump and a slap, and we said, uh-oh, something happened to Sergeant Santini. So one of us crawled over there, and when he came back, Sergeant Santini's out on a pavement. He's out. Out cold.
Hold on, John. The clock's got us. We're at the bottom of the hour. We've got to take a break. We'll find out what happened to Sergeant Santini when we get back. This is Jerry Pippin. And this is our special What Happened at Fort Bend. At Fort Bend. We'll be back.